The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and to learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Please hang up and try again.
Grab a slice of the Epic Pie Cast. Don't stick it in your mouth. Put it in your ear holes now. Ladies and gentlemen, Nelson, Lugo, and Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming to you from the beautiful and spacious Chaos House in Astoria, Queens, this is the Epic Pie Cast, episode 17. I am your host, Nelson Lugo.
And I am your other host, Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Schaefer, I have to admit, there's something different about you.
I sound way more awesome.
Yeah, and you're easier on the eyes.
Ooh.
And you're more pleasant to be. Wait a minute, you're not Schaefer the Dark Lord.
What? Hi.
please introduce yourself to all 12 listeners.
All 12? Oh, there's more?
At least 12, yeah.
Ooh, well, I'm one of them, so there's 11. hello, internets. I am Charles Stunning. I am half of Afterbirth Monkey, who is the show band of the podcast.
What? No, you created our intro for the
podcast.
Yes,
we did. Yes, we did. So I introduced Schaefer the Dark Lord, and I am also Schaefer the Dark Lord today.
You are filling in for Mr. T. Dark Lord.
Mr. T. Dark Lord is his father.
Right. He's on tour. He's on the group therapy tour as we speak, as this podcast is being recorded.
Yep.
I think he just finished San Diego, is that right?
Yes.
And so you have been very gracious to accept sitting in for Schaefer and co-hosting the podcast with me.
Well, I get to hear the sound of my own voice in a couple weeks while I brush my teeth, so what is bad about that?
Nothing. A whole lot of nothing. And let me tell you, I am very, very happy that you are here. Because now I get to enjoy the podcast without the totalitarian regime that is Schaefer the Dark Lord.
He's gonna murder you.
Let me tell you something. I got that whole ladies and gentlemen thing, I got that out in one take. If Schaefer were here, he would have made me do it six times.
Oh, should I go back and make
it? No, you're not making me do anything. The shackles are off. anything and everything can happen.
The cat's away, the mice will play.
Yes, when Schaefer's away, Nelson gets to do whatever the fuck he wants.
Oh, God.
What?
Yeah!
So this is going to be exactly like every other podcast we've ever done.
Okay.
You and I, we're going to sort of chat and talk about whatever nerdy consumable things mm-hmm. that we have been enjoying. Mm-hmm. And maybe stuff that we've been hating. I don't know. And then we're going to have a guest a little bit later. And we'll introduce him a little later.
I'm so excited.
I'm very, very excited for today's
guest.
Oh my
gosh, I have peed a little.
And then we're going to plug any sort of appearances that we have coming up. Like any shows.
Delightful.
Anything. Yeah, exactly.
I'll have to go get my planner from my room.
I will turn on my handy dandy pocket computer and...
Yeah, don't do that. I have this cute little notebooky thing. Aww. That I dot all my I's with hearts. I don't really do that.
Don't. They're good.
No.
Good,
God, good. No.
So what's up? What's up, Chuck? What, you know, you've been doing anything cool? You've been reading anything, watching anything, listening to anything that you want to talk about?
Yeah, actually a lot of things.
Oh, okay.
I got a new job that consists of me putting people in seats.
Oh, all right.
At a restaurant.
Oh,
and
okay.
All I do is read comic books now, so I am terming myself First Trade Chuck. Because I have bought so many first trades of things in the past, like, 2 weeks.
Right, and you mean comic books?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
because right, awesome.
I can't do whatever the individual, I can't.
Yeah, I stopped.
Go week
yeah,
by
I
week.
Can't. Well, I go week by week now because it's digital.
Oh yeah, you have that.
Yeah, I've stopped. I've stopped collecting physical copies. I just can't do it.
Yeah, I anything that's already in like a book form,
sure.
I will consume. I started.
So what are your favorites right now?
Chew.
Oh, Chew.
Oh my god, Chew.
Chew is so good.
It's so disgusting and charming. It's all the things I like.
Yeah, and for those of you who've been listening to the podcast, we talk about Chew quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I don't think we need to get into it anymore. Yeah, but if you do, if you don't know Chew, C-H-E-W, go out and get it. There's I think they're up to their fifth or sixth volume at this point.
Seven?
Yeah, all right.
Seven.
Okay.
Because I'm going to borrow the rest of the trades from my lovely friends, because... I can't break my stride of just having the first trades of everything.
Absolutely.
If I had the second trade off something, it's gonna ruin my cred.
I don't think that's a thing. But what else? What else are you reading?
I'm also reading. Oh god, what else am I reading? I started reading the new Ghostbusters. I really love it.
Yeah, you know what? We were at a gig last night, and you were telling me about this, mm-hmm. and I told you then I was very, very hesitant.
Yeah.
Because I'm a Ghostbusters fan.
Oh, me too.
And I was very, very hesitant to pick up that comic book issue, because mm-hmm. I've been burned before by earlier stuff.
Yeah.
But you like it.
Oh, yeah. I feel like it just really captured the quirky, campy joy of Ghostbusters.
Oh.
I read it, and I hear Venkman's voice. And it makes everything better. This is why I'm such a slow reader, because I'm like, I'm going to read myself a story in my brain.
So, now, which canon is it? Is it the movie? Is it the cartoon?
It's a blend of all of them. They sort of reference both. So,
okay.
They're talking about Stay Puffed and the multiple encounters they've had with Stay Puffed.
Okay.
Like, they
start
talking about that. There's also references to other nerd culture, like Rage Reams and the other Blues Brother is in his dreams, which is really great. I'm sorry that I ruined that, because I was so surprised and excited, but I don't...
Yeah, yeah.
All 11 of you are going to just be fine. You'll be okay. but they made a Doctor Who reference in one of the appendices, and I kind of started tearing up. Like, don't do this to me. I love Doctor Who.
You know what? I'm going to pick it up. You just hand me the first trade,
mm-hmm.
because you're first trade Chuck.
First trade Chuck.
I'm going to give it a read, and if I like it, I guess I'm just going to start buying all the digital volumes.
Yeah.
That's very good. Thank you for introducing me to that.
Yeah, no worries. Because
I had seen it, and I was like, I don't know.
Yeah. Also, Janine looks kind of like my roommate, and that kind of was like...
Yeah, and Janine and your roommate are both lovely, beautiful women. That's all I'm saying.
Very true.
Yes.
Very true.
Aw,
shout out to my roommate. What up, Sherry?
What else? What else? Anything else?
I started listening to a podcast called Welcome to Night Vale.
I love Welcome to Night Vale. I don't think we've ever talked about it here.
No, we haven't, because I first heard about it because I went to a burlesque show and someone did a Night Vale burlesque number. And I was like, I don't understand.
For those of you who don't know, Welcome to Night Vale is a podcast. So it's very short. It's like 20 minutes.
Yeah, 20
if that.
Piece, yeah.
And basically, it's kind of like the small town radio station.
Mm-hmm, like the community giving, radio.
Right, the community radio, giving you almost like a bulletin board facts of the town. Like, you know, there's a town meeting, or there's a bake sale, or
the mayor made an announcement.
Right, or there's going to be a school closing mm-hmm. because of weather. But it's peppered with the most weirdest...
Absurd.
Like, it's a combination of Twin Peaks, X-Files,
mm-hmm.
Lost,
yeah.
And Lovecraft.
Oh, yes.
All kind of bound together in this one radio announcer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the one topic is, you know, hey, you know, there's a sale down at the general store. Come on down for 25% off. And then he'll mention something about, you know, the Demon Boy Scouts are having a bake sale. It's the most ridiculously awesome thing ever.
I'm working so hard on my impression of that guy. I'm like, do not go near the dog park. The dog park does not exist.
Do you follow their Twitter feed?
I do.
It's also fucking hilarious.
From them. That's how bad it is. Hilarious. Don't forget to give blood today. It doesn't matter whose. Just give.
What I love about it is that they're each self-contained,
mm-hmm.
right? And they're very... You don't have to listen to all of them to get the absurdity of
it. You don't.
But if you do listen to all of them, there actually is a narrative. There's an overarching storyline.
Yeah, because it all sort of... the catalyst for the beginning is a stranger coming into town named Carlos, and I feel like he's sort of the crucible factor.
He's new,
and he's exploring, and he's referenced every once in a while.
Yeah.
And things get hairy.
Yeah.
I said hairy, and I talked about Carlos. Night Vale is going to get that joke.
Yes. So if you're not listening to Welcome to Night Vale, go out. Get the pot again. They're very short.
You can breeze
through them in like a day.
37.
Yeah, exactly.
They come out bi-monthly. The 1st and the 15th of every month.
There's also a Twitter feed, which is just as ridiculous.
Yeah.
And there's also, I think there's a Tumblr. If there isn't a specific Tumblr for Night Vale, there are so many fans of Night Vale where they've kind of created their own.
Yeah.
And it's just wonderful.
It's so delightful and demented.
Yeah. It's funny and creepy and absurd and just really good writing. Just excellent writing and excellent delivery. I don't know who the guy is who does the...
Joseph Fink.
He's wonderful.
He's fantastic.
His deadpan delivery on this stuff
is... Oh, are you talking about the narrator?
The narrator, yes.
Oh, Cecil Baldwin.
Yes. His deadpan delivery...
His glass is really high.
That's all right. You're allowed. What makes it such a listening pleasure is just the very matter-of-fact way he delivers all that information.
Yeah.
With almost no internal commentary.
Yeah.
No judgment on his part.
I love it.
It's just news to
him. I want to be his friend.
Awesome.
I used to want Morgan Freeman to narrate my entire life, but now I want Cecil Baldwin to narrate my whole life. You hear that, Cecil Baldwin? Narrate my whole life.
What? We're calling you out, Baldwin.
Yeah.
What else you got?
You
wanted to talk about that YouTube thing.
Oh.
Yes.
So, there is a YouTube cartoon.
Yeah.
It is my new god.
Oh,
there's
dear.
There's only one of it.
Okay.
It's 10 minutes long, and it's on Cartoon Hangover. It's called Bee and Puppy Cat.
Bee and Puppy Cat. Okay.
I still
haven't watched it, so...
And it's Natasha Algeri, the same woman who animates Adventure Time. So it's got that very Adventure Time look, the very, like, rounded edges.
Sure.
Like, very much so. And it is my jam. This main character, Bee, the very first thing that happens is she gets fired from her job, which... I can relate to, because I typically get fired from most of my jobs. It's only 10 minutes long, but she started this Kickstarter campaign after it started, and they're going to make, like, 6 more episodes.
Oh, wonderful.
Soon.
Okay.
So I'm really, really excited.
So what's it about?
It is about a young woman named Bee who is fired from her job, and then from the sky falls this creature that looks like a puppy and looks like a cat. And she's like, oh, it's a cat? Or is it a dog? And it's so ludicrous. Like, she comes home, she's like, I bought you presents. I bought you a bone, and I wrapped a mouse around it. And she's like, really out there. Really
so
out
this
there.
Is really a cartoon about a sad lady who basically pours all of her emotions into an animal.
And then suddenly gets a job temping in space with the puppy cat.
In outer space?
In outer space. In the first episode, they go to a place called Fishbowl Space. And they babysit a fish named Wallace.
Aww. And this is on YouTube.
And it's on YouTube. If you go to YouTube, you can type in Bee and Puppy Cat, and it's like the only thing that's there.
All right. I will check it out.
You should.
Is the Kickstarter still going?
I have no idea. I know they met their goal and then some to make more episodes.
Okay.
So.
All right.
All I care about is that there's going to be more Bee and Puppy Cat, and my cosplay that I'm working on is going to be valid. Somebody like, look, there's like 6 episodes of this.
Right.
You know, that's only like half of Firefly. So
True. Firefly.
A moment of silence for Firefly.
Pouring one out for Firefly. Yeah. Awesome.
How about you? Anything new on the
A whole lot of like, the usual stuff I've been consuming and enjoying is still par for the course. Like, I'm still reading all the same stuff. Mm. I'm very, very happy that the holidays are over because all of my favorite TV shows are back.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is back.
I watched some of that.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine is one of the funniest television shows right now.
Have you been watching Community?
You know what? I watched the first 2 episodes and I wasn't... Some of the magic is gone for me.
Of the 5th season?
Yeah.
I'm just so happy that Dan Harmon's back. that I just, like, like, I miss Jim Han.
I'm glad they have another season, because it's such an underdog kind of show.
Yeah.
However, there's just something in the new season. I don't know. It just seems like they all understand that they've kind of overstayed their welcome by a season. And they understand that this is also their final season. And so it feels to me like they've got a little bit of senioritis. You know, like, they're just kind of showing up, kind of phoning it in. I don't know. Again, this might be me being very critical.
This is the season for the I hate saying background players, but, like, the secondary characters. I feel like Magnitude in that show is just, like, he's nailing it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I feel like pop, that pop. Is... pop, pop! Freaks out. So good. But Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I watched a little bit of that, and then I stopped watching TV because I have a life outside of
fair enough. I Hulu everything. I either Hulu or Netflix everything.
I do too. I haven't.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine is by far one of the funniest television shows right now. Like, hands down. Mm-hmm. Laugh out loud.
Yeah.
And it's a cop show. And sometimes they open with a murder and it's still fucking hilarious.
It's got that kind of that Scrubs quality, that, like, delightful.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it doesn't, you know, it isn't mired in any kind of, like, dire realism. It's always over the top. It's always silly, you know. And all of the characters are caricatures, but they're very fleshed out caricatures. Yeah, if that makes sense.
And I always appreciate comedians who can play a very large character, but don't comment on it.
Right.
Like, oh, I'm really goofy. I think Sandberg's just like, I'm an idiot, and he just does it.
Yeah, like, yeah, like, but he's like the idiot who always succeeds.
Yeah,
so it's
he's
like
a lucky idiot.
Well, no, he's actually, his character is actually very smart and very good at his job. Mm-hmm. He's a very, very good detective, but he's kind of like what would happen if Ferris Bueller grew up to be a detective? Like, he gets away with murder, and because he's just so, he's only concerned with himself, mm-hmm. and he's only concerned, but at the same time, he's still damn good at his job, and it's really funny. I'm liking it a lot. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is back.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I gotta catch up on
this show. You know, there's so many people hate this show. I don't understand why. I love this show so much.
No, I need to catch up on it.
It's so good. What else? Almost Human is that buddy cop show with the human and the robot. It's so good.
Do you want to explain it to me?
It's a buddy cop show.
Okay.
With a human. And a robot. That's all you need to know. And it's set in the future. It's set in the near future.
Sold.
Yeah, it's really good. I haven't really done. I saw The Hobbit.
Did you?
The sequel, The Desolation of Smog. I have never said this about a Lord of the Rings film or a Peter Jackson film in regards to Lord of the Rings, but this one was too long. This one was way too long. I'm usually the person who's like, yes, give me more. Give me more Lord of the Rings. Yes. Mm-hmm. 4-hour, 8-hour film. Yes, I'll watch it.
Well, with the Lord of the Rings, I mean, the theatrical release was just wonderful. And so you got, like, this extended cut. Ugh. I have only the extended cut.
Yeah. That's the only thing I watch. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just, well, no. Why would I?
Yeah.
I'm not on a diet.
Exactly.
Give me the full portion.
Give me all of it.
Until I'm sick.
Desolation of Smog? Mm-hmm.
It was too long. They use a lot of the canon from other books.
Like, well, he's just blatantly adding characters that never existed or are only mentioned in one line in appendice somewhere. It feels padded. It feels really padded.
I wish I could be Zorak in that moment because I just looked at you and went, like, I wanted there to be bongos. They just went,
well, here's the, I love the first Hobbit film. The internet's yelling at me right now. The Unexpected Journey.
Thank you. I was like, yes. Something with the dome.
I loved it. Journey. I loved every second of it. It felt padded, but to me, I loved the padding that they put
there.
Yeah,
I loved the scene with Galadriel and Gandalf.
Yeah, absolutely. And Radagast and, you know.
you know who he is, right?
Oh, yeah. He was a Doctor
Who.
But this Desolation of Smog feels padded. It feels gratuitously padded.
Oh, boy.
It was like a 3-hour film that probably could have been 2 hours. Mm-hmm. It was an hour too long. And I've never said that about a Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings film ever.
Yeah.
So I'm a little concerned going into this third one about, like, how much more. Because, I mean, they, you know, there's now a love thing between the dwarf and the elf. And
there's
a,
what?
Yeah. And rather than Toriel, the elf, and... Again, I don't know enough about Lord of the Rings to know if she's a completely new character or if she was just like an ancillary appendix. But
know.
I know she. I know.
To read the Silmarillion
one. But like now, there's like a love thing between her and Keeley, the dwarf, and it diminishes her badassness because
now she's like, oh, I love this guy.
Right,
because
like now
what,
she's not,
because what woman can exist to be a badass without falling in love?
Exactly,
with someone,
exactly. And she's like, she's not racing off to save them because it's the right thing to do. She's racing off to save them because she's in love with the dwarf. And it's like, okay, I guess. I liked it better when she was just a badass.
Yeah.
You know, but other than that, you know, reading a whole lot of comic books, you know, I started reading Rat Queens, which if you haven't started reading Rat Queens, listeners, go out and buy Rat Queens.
Rat Queens is the
most hilariously badass comic book I have read in a long time.
Yeah.
It is, the fourth issue just came out, which means they're probably going to have a trade in like another two issues.
That means I can start reading
right.
it. First grade Chuck.
And it is basically, it's a D&D world. It's a Dungeons & Dragons world.
Yeah.
But with very modern sensibilities and languages and dialogue. And these women are badass.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't, and it's so wonderful because they're badasses just to be fucking badasses.
Yeah.
There's no love interest. There's no men involved. There's none of that bullshit. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, there's a wizard. There's a dwarf warrior. There's a smidgen, you know, thief. There's a badass, like, voodoo priestess, you know, and they are an adventuring group, and they just go out, and there's, like, wholesale slaughter of everything and anyone that gets in their way.
I love that.
And it's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Highly recommend it.
Cool.
Yeah.
When it's in trade, I will.
I would imagine pretty soon. I would imagine pretty soon because they just dropped fourth issue, so I would say within the next 6 months you'll have first volume trade.
Yes.
But I'm playing the shit out of XCOM Enemy Unknown.
Okay.
And I've never been one to play a turn-based tactical strategy game before,
okay.
is what this is. Like, you move, you command up to, like, 6 soldiers, and then you move them around the battlefield, and then you give them commands, and they all do that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you stop, and then the enemy moves and does things.
Oh, nice.
So it's a turn-by-turn thing. And I've never liked those games, but for some reason, I am so sucked into this world
mm-hmm.
and the tacticalness and the, you know, the planning ahead. I'm really, really enjoying it.
Yeah. The small child that I watch on occasion is really in love with the Nintendo games.
Uh-huh.
And he, for Christmas, got Kirby's Return to Dream Land.
Oh!
So I've been playing that with a 5-year-old.
Nice!
And it's actually really great.
Yeah.
I really like it. I always want to play as Meta Knight, though.
Well, sure.
Because, come on.
Why wouldn't you?
Because Meta Knight.
Exactly.
Done. And so that's really fun. I don't play it a lot because just...
Yeah.
He gets very stressed really easily about it. Because, I mean, it's a game that's for 10 and up.
Right. And he's what, 6?
He's
6'9"?
5.
Oh, he's 5.
And so he just... He'll get so, like, tense about it. I'm like, well, okay, we got to take a break. So we've barely made it to, like, third stage, I think.
Oh, that's
also
adorable.
Other people play it with him when I'm not here, so I'm like, what? Hey, man. So I'm just gonna have to open a save file all on my own and just play through it.
That's
but
fine.
It's really cute. It's really cute. I recommend it for 10 and up. Don't let your 5-year-old play it, because they'll cry.
No.
They'll cry really bad. And then I discovered this iPhone game.
It
is called Space Team.
Wait, hold on. Explain this, because I think I know what this is.
You have to have other people physically in the room with you for a
Yes, yes.
And you have all these buttons and controls, and then everybody just yells at each other.
Yes.
And you have to do what...
Wait, you're playing that?
Yeah, we're playing that so hard at the Chaos House.
Dude, I will download it, and then we can play over Wi-Fi.
Oh my God, my roommates are going to be so happy.
I want in that. I've always wanted to play it, but I couldn't find anybody to play it with me.
Yeah. So, you doing anything else?
Probably, but it's all the same stuff. Like, I watch what I watch, I read what I read. I haven't gotten anything new.
Yeah.
I
do want to take a moment and tell all of the internets that when Lugo came to the Chaos House today, he brought me Lock and Key, so I'm going to start reading that.
Oh, Lock and Key!
And I'll probably write my tiny little book review on it, because I read reviews about comics.
You should put those up. I'm not kidding. Your little notes that you write to yourself, you should just put them up.
They're so embarrassing.
It doesn't matter.
I explain the plot really quick in a paragraph, and then I write what I think about it in the really quick paragraph.
Dude, you should just get like a Tumblr, a free little Tumblr account. And
I don't understand Tumblr.
I will teach you the Tumblr. I'm not an expert, but I will teach you the
Tumblr. Teach me to tumble, Lugo.
I read the final issue of Lock and Key on the train ride over here this morning. I cried my fucking eyes out.
Well, you looked like you weren't crying when you showed up, so.
I composed myself.
Nice. You got a baby too. So.
It was the most heartbreaking, beautiful issue I've read in a long time.
Nice.
And it's the final issues. I don't think there's going to be good. I mean, they've wrapped up the story.
It's like done.
They're done.
Cool.
And
I'm so impatient. I don't wait well for things.
It's so good.
Yay.
So good. And it wraps up everything really wonderfully. It's bittersweet. It's tragic. It's beautiful. It's everything that I wanted from a Lock and Key story.
Yay.
And I think other than that, that's about it.
Nice.
You know, nothing new to report on the whole magic, gathering the magic stuff. I'm still in a holding pattern for venues and things like that.
Cool.
But I've got some appearances, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah,
Afterbirth Monkey has some appearances we'll talk about later.
We're working on a staged version of our music as well. It's very much in its infancy, but...
Oh, okay. We'll talk about that a little bit after. And other than that, I just want to say how pleasant this is.
Really?
Yeah. Schaefer is so... How do I put this tactfully? He's an asshole.
Oh my God.
No, he's not an asshole. He's a great, I love him to death. He's like a brother of mine. But he has such a chokehold on this podcast that if it isn't done in a certain way, worded exactly the same way every single time, he has a little conniption fit. And he's like right now, this is easy. It's you know, it's very conversational. You know, like I'm not worrying about segments or trying to get the exact right. So I just want to say, all hail Chuck Stunning.
Ooh, thank you.
And Schaefer the Dark Lord can go bite my ass.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Do you think he'll actually listen to this one?
He doesn't listen to this. Are you kidding?
I think I'm going to send it to him, and he's going to send it on, and he'll never hear it.
No, he'll never listen to this. He'll never listen to this.
It'll probably make him crazy, too, because I'm going to go, oh, that's good enough.
He doesn't even listen to the podcast. Well, no, that's not true. He listens to it probably more than any human being on the planet, because he has to edit it and engineer it together. But I guarantee you, if he doesn't actually have to do any work on it, he won't be listening to this.
Phew. Good. I was kind of nervous because he's so very particular.
Yes, he
about
is.
Things.
He's like, very, very particular about
sometimes
things.
Sometimes I'll ask him to like grab a beer or something, and he'll be like, "No, I'm working on the podcast." And I'm like, "You, babe,
Honey, well, I mean, look, I mean, the reason why our podcast sounds the way it does, as professional as it does, is because of all the really hard work that he puts into it. Like, there's a two microphone setup. Yeah. He's got really complicated. Pro Tools things going on. And
I know, I've been on the podcast.
Yeah, well, the listeners don't know this.
Oh,
you know?
It's really high tech. It's Well, I mean, he records all his albums.
Exactly. And so he edits out.
Incredible.
He makes me sound a whole lot better than I actually am.
Yeah.
Because all of the he edits out.
Yeah. We probably won't. I will destroy
you. No, nor should you, because only a crazy person would do that. Hence, Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Schaefer the Dark Lord.
He's a crazy person.
He is, yes.
So Schaefer, if you're listening to this, I hope your tour is going well. I hope you're singing all the raps and selling all the t-shirts.
He tweeted about rehearsing Mark and Eugene and now hiring in the van all the way to San Diego.
Nice.
And I almost peed. I was picking up the 5-year-old and I pulled my phone out because I was like, oh, it buzzed at me. But then I was like, why are all the best rappers in the world in one place? And so I tweeted about it. He was like, well, Charles, Dr. Awkward isn't actually in the van. He's over the phone. But this van's still a rock. And I went, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Y'all are working together.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm a burgeoning nerdcore lover / nerd rap writer.
Yeah, myself. Absolutely.
I'm kind of working on that.
Absolutely.
There might be a couple projects that I'm
excited about it. And I'm also excited about Doc Awkward's and Schaefer Doc Lord's song, Now Hiring.
Oh my gosh. It's so good. I love it so much. It's on a playlist, and I always listen to nerdcore rap on my way to work on the train. And I'll be like bouncing my head like I'm some kind of badass. And definitely not. And like,
I'm listening to Adam Warrock's and Schaefer's
Mark and Eugene.
And it's
my heart.
It's so adorable.
It's,
they're like, yeah, we're badasses. We're so tough and hard.
Those fast triplets that Schaefer does.
Oh, yeah.
I know they're coming every time because I've listened to it so much. And I'll still just go.
Wait, how did this Schaefer bitch session turn into a Schaefer love session?
Oh, because I'm here. Schaefer's crazy. He hates mice. His apartment's really clean.
Okay, now I hate you. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break at this point, and we are going to come back with our guest for this podcast. We love him. We hope you will love him, too. In the meantime, enjoy this.
When I'm lying in bed at night, I don't want to grow up. Nothing ever seems to turn out right, but I don't want to grow up. How do you move in a world of fog that's always changing things? Makes me wish that I could be a dog. 1, 2, 3, 4. When I see the price you pay, I don't want to grow up. I don't ever want to be that way. I don't want to grow up. Seems our folks turn into things that they'd never want. The only thing to live for is today. I'm gonna put a hole in my TV set. I don't want to grow up. Open up the medicine chest. I don't want to grow up. I don't want to have to shout it out. Good Boy Scout. I don't want to have to learn to count. I don't want the biggest amount. I don't want to grow up. When I see my parents fight, I don't want to grow up. They go out drinking all night, but I don't want to grow up. I'd rather stay here in my room. Nothing out there but sad and gloom. I don't want to live in a big old tomb on Grand Street. 2, 3, 4. When I see the 5 o'clock news, I don't want to grow up. Comb their hair and shine their shoes. I don't want to grow up.
back.
Yay!
From the break. I know, that was fun. With us here in the beautiful and spacious Studio Chaos House, we have our guest for today. He is a storyteller, and not in the way you think. He is a multiple Moth Slam winner. He is a Moth Grand Slam champion. He is also a TED Talk presenter.
Mm-hmm.
He teaches and tours the world doing what he does.
And he's one of my favorite humans on the entire planet.
Take a number. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Peter Agrero.
Thank you. Thank you, podcast.
Hello, Peter.
How you doing, Lugo?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm all right.
I know you woke up like, what, an hour ago?
About that.
Yay!
So, for those, like, I know what the Moth is. I'm passionate about the Moth, and I'm sort of starting my sort of burgeoning toe steps into that that whole art form.
Yeah.
But you've been in it for quite some time, and so for the people who don't know what that is, please explain what the Moth is and what storytelling is.
Yes.
The Moth is a nonprofit based in New York. It's been around for about 15 years. It was started by a guy named George Dawes Green, who's an author from Georgia. We lived in Georgia for a long time. So it's basically, they believe that everyone has a story to tell. And so to that end, what they do is there's essentially three arms of the Moth. There's the curated main stage shows where they get people, you know, it might be one or two celebrities, and then regular people also just telling stories about their life. You know, and,
right.
But it could be, you know, they also, you know, astronauts, you know, CPAs, race car drivers, you know, and then, you know, actors and musicians. There'll be, like, authors. It's just essentially people telling a story, just like with the main stage shows, they're, like, 10 to 12-minute stories just on a theme, you know, just about an incident in your life. Not your whole life story, just about a moment, a choice, a decision.
Yeah.
For example, I did a show once. I hosted a main stage show, and there was a guy named Hector Black, and he was, I believe, like 92 years old, lived down south. He was one of these guys that was he was a farmer, but he was also like a civil rights protester in the 60s. He got arrested a bunch of times. His story was about his daughter was murdered, and it was about the relationship that he kind of developed with his daughter's murderer. He ended up...
I've heard this on a podcast.
It was, I don't know if it's been out yet, or maybe really recently. I think it might have been.
Yeah.
And Hector was... he's amazing. And he's just a regular guy.
Yeah.
You know? And it's... so they have those, and those are, you know, those are great. We do these main stage shows all over the country. You know, I've started hosting those too, which is really fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then there's... there's one in Iowa City next month. We'll talk about that later. But then they also have the Moth Shop Community Education Program, which is what I teach for.
Right.
And we go in the five boroughs to underserved communities. Like, we'll do stuff in high schools and stuff, but senior centers and drug rehab units and, I don't know, AIDS groups, homeless groups, and teach people how to tell stories that way. And then that, you know, a lot of those stories end up getting on the podcast or on the radio or on a main stage show. So it's like collecting stories that never would have been heard before, particularly in New York. For example, there's a great one that we found. This guy had a story about his birthday when he was a kid, and he was living up in Harlem, and it was really a great story about what Harlem was like for a kid in the early 80s. And so his... long story short, he ended up hanging out with his brother. His brother asked him to hang out with him, and he couldn't believe it. Like, so he did that instead of what he and his buddies used to always do, is they would take the subway to Times Square and use screwdrivers to break into the arcade machines and steal money. So again, it's a great picture in New York. But the next morning he wakes up, and now he has to go get the milk and the newspaper. His three buddies are on the cover of the newspaper, because they're the guys that tried to mug Bernie Goetz, and they got shot.
Oh.
And, like, so we got a story that would have been lost from the guy who wasn't with...
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
So it's really powerful. Like, you get these yeah. amazing stories, and just Wikipedia Bernie Goetz sometimes, Chuck. Bernie Goetz.
Specifically me.
Right.
Google that.
Google Bernie Goetz.
Young Padawan of storytelling.
But then the other arm is the Moth Slam program. We do mm-hmm. these all over the country. I believe in like 18 different cities. Might even be more now.
Yeah.
So you have a theme. People come. They put their name in a hat. They pick 10 names from the hat. And there's you tell a 5-minute story on that theme, and then it's judged, and then somebody wins, and then they get 10 winners and do a thing called a grand slam, and then somebody wins, and what do you win? Nothing, but it doesn't really.
You win kudos. You win accolades.
You get to be like,
you're way too humble for your own good, sir. But I mean, the Moth has grown into to be a quite prestigious thing yeah. in both the artistic and literary
definitely
field. I mean, and it's recognized as being something of a big deal. You know, if you can tell a story that makes it to a grand slam, then yeah. you get noticed.
No, it's definitely true. Yeah, true. I mean, and it goes in cycles with the Moth. I mean, the cool thing is, I know that if I'm gonna go, like, I host the one on the first Monday of the month at the Bauhaus, and I know that every month I'm gonna go, and I'm gonna do a sold out show for 300 people in Brooklyn.
Yeah,
like, which you can't get that anywhere else. No. And it's the best audience in the world. Like, they will, if they don't like your story, they'll just put their eyes down.
They'll tune out. Yeah.
But there's, you know, people are really, they're there to hear good stories. It's very different. I've done improv and stand up and stage acting and camera acting and a million different things, and the audience for the Moth, they want you to succeed.
Yeah.
And that's, like, a lot of audiences are there to see you mess up. And that's cool, too, because that's live theater.
That's but, half my life.
Yeah, yeah. We'll stop messing up. So, but, like, these people are there because they want to hear a good story.
And yeah.
Like, there's nothing like it. It's really, somebody starts telling a story. You have these 10 people, and they're just, some are writers, some are performers, some are just some guy with a story, and, like, he'll get up there and tell a story, and it's transcendent,
you know?
And it's really beautiful. You have the person telling the story on stage, and then the people in the audience remembering stories from their life, and it's this nonverbal energy exchange that's just really rare, and you don't get it anywhere. So the stories are to kind of succinctly, if the too long didn't read answer, is the Moth is just people telling true first-person narrative stories from their life. And what it does is it takes your specific experience and it makes it universal.
Right.
It's, you tell your story about the time you were scared, or the time you were mad, or the time you were joyful, and people will be able to relate to those feelings. And it shows that you're not alone, and it shows that they're not alone.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful.
Absolutely. I know for myself, doing it just in the handful of times that I've been there, you know, and the handful of times I've gotten to go up, it's really a stage experience. It's an artistic experience that I've never had before.
It's for real. So,
you know,
lovely.
And I've been performing for the better part of like 15 years, and there's nothing, words cannot describe it.
Yeah.
It is better than, and well, better is probably not the right word, but it's different in a way that I've never experienced.
It's completely unique. It's a singular experience because there's no other audience like that. I did a Moth show in Ann Arbor, Michigan, at the Michigan State Theater.
Yeah.
And it was like 2,500 people.
Wow.
In the summer, in this big, beautiful stage, and it was hot in there, and it's just me on stage with a microphone. And like, there was, you could hear a pin drop. Like, everyone is right there listening, right with you. And then, like, something happens. There's, like, a tension release, and they laugh, and it's just, like, it's like a rolling wave coming at you. And, like, it's like a hug. Like, the audience there is like a hug at the Moth, and it's really amazing.
I've actually done it enough times now where people, like, repeat people who go to the Moth, like, recognize me now. And it's weird because I'm being recognized for something that I don't associate being good at yet.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, right, you told that story about your grandmother one time. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that was me. Thank you.
That shows how much it's not about good or bad. It's about telling the truth. Yeah. So, like, I figure this with a lot of different art forms, with stories specifically. Like, as long as you tell the truth and you get it out there, what you think about it is not important. Right. So as long as it affected somebody.
Absolutely.
Whatever. Like, yeah, one person. Yeah. Something. And, yeah. And that's enough. You know? Yeah. And like, and the beautiful thing about these audiences is they'll tell you that, you know?
Yeah.
They'll seek you out and say, you know what, this happened to me too. And
yeah.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
It's unlike anything else.
And so you have parlayed your success with The Moth into what is essentially a career for you now.
A lot of projects. Yeah.
You know, you've got a couple of stage shows as a result of all this time. You've traveled the world doing storytelling. You've done some pretty significant stuff. I know you went to the UK with a spirits brand. Was it Jack Daniels?
No, it was one of the labels from Glenfiddich. It was Grant's Blended. It's their blended Scotch label.
Sure.
And they had a campaign called True Tales for a while, and that was from The Moth. Like the reps from the marketing company saw me do my first main stage show at the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Yeah.
And it, man, this is where it's luck. They had just gotten off the plane, came right to the show. I went first in the show. They fell asleep after my story. So. So they happened to see me, and then I got a Facebook message from this woman, Dawn, and she was like, Peter, we saw you at the show. I'm working for a whiskey company in the UK, and we want you to come tell stories. And I thought it was a practical joke, because I love telling stories.
Right.
I love whiskey. And like, those are my like two of my favorite things. If she was also like, there'll be butts there, I would have been like, I would have, you know, this isn't real. I would have, you know, scratched with some Sixth Sense stuff. So, and then so I ended up going to London that one trip. And then when I was there, they were having their big sales, their global sales meeting, and they needed 15 minutes at the top to explain what this idea was. So I just kind of like, they were like, Peter, we'll give you 15 minutes to do whatever you want. Wow. So I just went up and I did, like, I talked about storytelling. And I did this parlor trick where, like, I got this woman in the audience and started one of their sales reps and got her to tell me about where she was from and the day she left. She ended up telling a story without realizing she was going to tell a story.
Yeah.
And then everybody in the room was like, okay, then we can do this. So, like, so I ended up, it was great, man. Like, I
awesome.
Went
yeah.
to the UK a bunch. I went to, I was in, you know, and we got to go to Monte Carlo.
Wow.
That was bonkers. And then we did, like, 3 weeks at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in 2012. And I got to bring like some of the storytellers from New York.
Yeah, I remember.
And Brad Lawrence and Andy Christie and Ophir Eisenberg. And
yeah.
Martin Dockery was there. And like, so we all got to kind of have this like kind of corporate sponsored storytelling vacation. Nice. It was nice.
Really cool.
Nice.
I mean, it's been good, man. Like, you know, it's what I do, you know?
As a result, you now have two shows. You have a sort of anthology show called Bear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you have your own personal one-man show called Daddy Issues.
Yeah.
Do you want to, let's talk about those two.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I know a lot of our listeners are not in New York, but I know you have dreams and aspirations for these things beyond New York.
Yeah, I mean, I've toured a bunch, and I was specifically, like, down south, and we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
But, like, there was, I want to be able to, I wanted to have a nice, simple show that, well, I mean, I started, the first storytelling show that I produced was a thing called the BTK Band.
Yeah.
And that it was just an unwieldy, that was just, BTK. It was.
I guess the best way, someone asked me what the BTK Band was at one point, and it's basically a loud, raucous, chaotic, joyful party.
Beautiful.
Of booze, good stories, pretty ladies,
mm-hmm.
and
it's
a crazy monkey.
Yeah.
That's basically, for those of you who don't know, who have never had the pleasure, the BTK Band is an all rock and roll improv band. And they have invited storytellers, some very, very experienced, some who've never told a story before. Yeah. And the storyteller, and they're called singers, and your next singer that you always introduce them.
I would call them a guest singer.
Yeah.
Guest singer.
Because for that, you know, 8 minutes when they're on stage, they're the lead singer of the band.
Yes.
Like, yeah. They're the one telling a story, and then the band improvises music behind them, mm-hmm. kind of like a score.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
And then we break in and like improvise choruses about their story.
Yeah.
So it was amazing.
I got to do one at the BTK, like one of the final shows at mm-hmm. open mic, and I just put my name in and you just like, you sort of have to like pay attention, and Peter's like, okay, sing something
now. It's a lot going on, yeah. But I was really intrigued by the use of like rhythm and music with stories, and how the rhythm of the music would affect the story, and how the story and the rhythm of the story would affect the music. And then we did that for like 6 years, and then, you know, then we tragically broke up in December, but that, you know, don't worry, everybody.
There's no such thing as
everybody
as,
will be fine.
Yeah.
Sorry your band died, Peter.
Well, I'm honored that I got to be a part of that twice.
You were both great.
It was it's an experience that I will never forget and probably will never have again. Which is unfortunate.
But like, while I was working on that, I also, you know, I've been working in burlesque for at this point probably 4 or 5 years now.
Yeah, at least that much, yeah.
Yeah. And one thing I noticed, so about 4 years ago, I was asked to do a friend's show called Told. This guy, Seth Lindy, is a producer for This American Life. He had a show called Told where he had 4 storytellers on a theme, and then he would have these interstitial bits, like bridging the stories. And it could be anything. He would just have, like, if there was a, he would have like a handwriting analysis expert that would then analyze the handwriting of the storytellers. It was some kind of theme that tied everything together.
Neat.
It was a great show. And he had to be out of town. He asked me to host it once so I could curate the whole thing. And what I've been noticing in burlesque at that time was how the burlesque performers were also telling stories. They were telling a narrative.
There's a definite, distinct correlation between storytelling and burlesque.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. You know, except you're not doing it with words. You're doing it with your costume and your music and your body. So I wanted to see what would happen if I put those two together. So I had storytellers, then followed by burlesque performers, doing an act that I thought would kind of comment on the same themes as the story.
Right.
So it was a really good idea. And it was really fun to do. So then I started developing it, and we've been doing it for about 4 years at this point. And the way it runs now is I take a storyteller and burlesque performer that I think would get along, that their aesthetics are similar.
Mm-hmm.
And I put them together and kind of send them away. And like with the only instructions...
Swim.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, the only instructions are really...
Paint Picasso.
Like, tell a difficult story.
Right.
Do a difficult act. And like, so you end up... Because I the
and difficult in the sense that it's vulnerable,
very
it's,
vulnerable.
Very
it's raw. It's touching on subjects you probably wouldn't normally talk about.
These are the stories that you can't. That's hard to do at a regular show in New York because you don't want to be the only person not telling the funny, you know, shit in your pants.
Right, right, right.
You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I, you know, this way I made a show where everybody was telling the bummer story. So, like, then it's not a bummer anymore. Then it's catharsis. So, like,
sure.
So then it frees up the storyteller to be able to tell the truth without having to hide behind jokes in the story.
Sure.
And it frees up the burlesque performer because they don't have to be sexy or erotic. They can just be. And,
right.
And so a lot of times that's a show where people might... You know, a burlesque performer might do something they've never done before. They'll do something, for example, like Charles Stunning.
I did the bear show for the Burlesque Blitz.
Yeah, oh, nice.
Just in December.
It. Yeah, just in December. And it pushed the boundaries of what I was willing to do on stage. I actually, I got completely nude for it because the story just, it needed it. You know, it wasn't like, oh, here's everything. You know, it was just like, no, this is... everything that needs to happen. It was incredible. It was a beautiful, beautiful burden to like take this person's story and interpret it with clothing and music to just like be silent and like, this is what happened. It was
gorgeous.
I'm getting chills just thinking about.
Well, I mean, as an artist, I mean, the idea of just being absolutely free just to experience that emotional state again in a safe space, you know, on your own terms, just is terrifying and thrilling at the same time. And I've seen a couple of the bear shows, and it's always a beautifully heart-wrenching experience. Mm-hmm. And what's great about it is that even though the stories are pretty down, I never left feeling down. I felt feeling very inspired and very hopeful and very
connected even to everyone.
Exactly. You know, just like, you know, again, I'm not alone. Mm-hmm. You know, the world's pain is my own pain.
My theory behind that is that, the dark things that we have, the difficult times in our life it's like a little kid in his bedroom being scared of what he thinks is a monster, and you turn the light on and it's just a bunch of clothes on a chair.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. So when you have these stories and you don't do anything with them, they become a monster in the dark. So you tell a story about it, you shine a light on it, and then you see what it really is. And then you start to own it. Instead of it owning you.
Absolutely.
And then you get power from that. You get a lot of power by owning your choices and owning the difficult times in your life. And there's still the humor that comes out of that show is really amazing.
It's
moments of release. And there's a lot of tears and a lot of stuff that makes people very uncomfortable. Yeah. I have to usually, every time, give like a trigger warning before the show, because there's like every show has some element of, you know, something that will, you know, could bring something up difficult for people.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just, I think, you know, the whole show is a trigger warning. But so we've been
one 90-minute trigger warning.
But that's, you know, so that show's really good, and I'm really happy with the way that's developed and evolved.
Yeah.
And then, so I needed another show or something else to work on. So that was the show Daddy Issues, which is the closest thing to like a one-man show. I've done a couple in the past.
Yeah.
I had a show years ago called Graphic Vulgar Lunacy. And it was...
great title.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
That was actually from a review I got in college for a sketch comedy show that said, Peter Ware's writing and acting should be commended for its graphic vulgar lunacy.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It's great. So,
that's like a great line.
For a long time, it was Graphic Vulgar Lunacy was my email address for a long time. And then into my professional life. And so eventually I had to stop doing that.
You need a name on your Gmail. Yeah.
But that was, so like that show was like essentially, it was a 45-minute show that took place like during in a class period, and the audience was a class, and I was a substitute teacher, and we had movies that their teacher ostensibly left for them to watch. There was an assignment. We checked the assignment at the end of the period. It was weird. I would probably do it again sometime.
Huh.
It was super weird. And then I did another one called Dark Days, which was based off of a bear idea that was like based off of a period of depression I had in my life. It was like four stories about this depression I went through in my early 20s, spliced with burlesque acts and with...
maybe that's what I saw.
That was probably...
That's what I saw, that one. Yeah, for some reason... So your new show, Daddy Issues, is that basically... Is that birthed from Dark Days?
No, this is just... I mean, it touches on... There's one story that has an overlap.
Okay.
Like, the end of Dark Days is part of the story of Daddy Issues. The Daddy Issues show is essentially five separate stories. This is the first time I've done something that's just me without burlesque or music or interviews being played or any tricks.
Yeah.
It's just me talking for about an hour and 10 minutes. So it's five stories from my life that are just really just about me and my dad. Five incidents. So there's one when I was 6 years old, one when I was 13 years old, one when I was 15. So 6, 13, 15, 22 and 36. So
and it goes chronologically.
Goes chronologically, right. And in between there, like the bumpers in between the stories are these lists I made of like things I know about my father, things I've heard about my father.
Got it.
You know, that kind of stuff.
And that's recorded so that you have a moment to catch your breath.
No, that's all. I read it. It's all in the notebook. So like it's all it's just me talking. And that's just stories. It's not like I hate saying like one man show, because then you get this idea that it's like characters.
Yeah,
it's just me telling stories. That's it. And you know, it's complicated because, you know, my relationship with my father is very difficult, and we've just always had a difficult relationship, and I'm learning more about that through doing the show.
Yeah.
And through going to therapy. I mean, that's a big help.
Yeah. So I want to stop you for just a second. Yeah. I know you hate the term one-man show. Yeah. And as I'm writing my own one-man show, I actually hate calling it a one-man show. That's as tough. Well.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that, A, it's like it's too gender weird.
And yeah.
Sort of promotes more of a spectacle. Like, it's a show.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I guess for the lack of a better term,
solo show is a little better, but even that is. I've just been calling it storytelling.
But I guess I've been doing that with my show.
Yeah,
it's listed as a storytelling. It's a magic show with storytelling or storytelling with magic, and even then, it's like no one outside of New York or maybe Los Angeles understands that when I say the word storytelling, they don't.
Yeah,
they envision like fairy tales. Yeah. Like, how do you get around that?
Yeah.
Well, the good thing is, in the past couple of years, the moth has exploded. And moth has become the shorthand to explain that to people.
Oh, sure.
For the first couple of years, people would say, what do you do? I said, I tell stories. And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, well, there's this thing called the moth. And you get up and you just talk about, it's just stories from your life.
Right,
and they're like,
right.
Oh, okay, I kind of get it. Now people will be like, what do you do? I say, I'm a storyteller. And they'll say, oh, like the moth? So like,
right.
Now people more, like the moth just got, they had a book. They transcribed 50 stories, and it just got on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah.
And like, that's a sign that like enough people
definitely,
you know,
definitely a sign.
It is tough though to explain, but once people see it once, then they get it. It's hard though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've seen Peter host a moth show, and I think the way you explain what storytelling is to the audience is so simple and so perfect.
Good.
It's incredible where you just, where you say, this is not a something happened to me thing. It's something happened and I did this.
Yeah.
You know, I love that storytelling sort of lives in that action thing where it goes from this happened, I did this, and it made me this.
Totally.
Right. Right.
It's not about, I always say it's not about like the house fire. It's about, you know, what did you grab in the house fire and why? That's what the story is. The story isn't about the thing that happened to you. The story is about what you did in response to that thing that happened to you.
Right. You know? It's the decision you made or the action you took.
It's always about a choice.
Rather than the thing that caused it.
Yeah. It's always about a choice, always about a decision. And that's what separates an anecdote from a story. An anecdote is just, here's this thing that happened. A story is, here's this thing that happened within the context of my life. And that's what separates those two.
Right.
Which I think is why it's becoming such a...
It's the oldest form of communication. Stories are the oldest form of communication. People have been telling stories since the dawn of time, but it's been, and there's also like in Jonesboro, Tennessee, there's storytelling center down there. It's huge. And they do everything. Like there is folk tales, there's some personal narrative, there's family history, that kind of stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's worth it to,
Tennessee?
Yeah, down in Tennessee. They do it once a year.
Oh,
but
okay.
They also have, they have a festival, but they also have resources all the time down there. It's like they call it the storytelling capital. And I met some of the people down there when I was on a tour. And, you know, people have been doing this forever. Like the form is changing. And the moth being now, you know, it's on 200 radio stations around the country and all these
cities. And there's a weekly podcast. Yeah. And
that's downloaded millions of times.
It's constantly referenced on almost every NPR show that's being produced.
Yeah.
And, you know, Radiolab pulls from it all the time.
And that only took 15 years to make that happen. You know what I mean?
This American Life pulls from it all the time.
Totally.
You know, it's becoming quite the cultural phenomenon, and I'm very lucky that I'm getting on board at this point, because you know it's now like I don't have to explain it. I can just say, oh, I'm going to the moth, and people know what I'm talking about.
And then I go, I'm coming with you.
But as far as you can't really, you don't have to. People aren't going to get it until they see it.
Yeah.
So like,
yeah.
If someone says, well, what is that? What is it? What do you do? What is it?
Then it's like, you have to
explain. Yeah. Or I just say, all right, stories from my life. It's first person narrative. Come see. Here's the next one. You know, if they don't, then, you know, they don't. But if they do.
I may need to pick your brain when this show's over and talk about opportunities for solo shows and things like that. So you teach storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
You've presented with your wife at a TED Talk.
Yeah.
You've won many Moth awards. You teach for the Moth.
Yeah.
You are on staff in some capacity there. You travel the world doing what you do.
Yep.
And that's all wonderful. Can we talk about Neil Gaiman now?
Yeah.
Sure.
Can we just please talk about Neil fucking Gaiman?
My buddy Neil Gaiman.
Neil Gaiman. I have his contact
information in my phone.
You have Neil Gaiman's. You can text. Can you text Neil Gaiman?
I have drunk texted. Like if I did a burlesque show.
My brain's gonna explode.
I did a burlesque show and there was a performer that was dressed like a character from Sandman.
Yeah.
And like so, like I took a picture of her and sent it to Neil.
Oh God.
You know, like it's stuff like that. Neil's my buddy.
All right, I need you to talk about.
Send him a picture of my butt. I would totally
if you could send him a picture of my butt, I would also let
him
do that.
High five, man!
High five.
But
please tell me the circumstances under which you met him, and if he smells nice. I think he smells nice.
all right. Yeah, he smells like tea. Tea.
Aww.
He smells like tea and I guess ink.
That's how exactly appropriate. How I think he would smell.
That's, I'm marking a new perfume.
Tea. Gaiman.
Gaiman.
So I did, George, who started the Moth, also started this thing a couple years ago called the Unchained Tour. And it was based down in Savannah. He bought a 40-year-old school bus, had a bunch of hippies.
Was this the one that was sponsored by TBS?
No, that was a USA Network.
USA,
thing.
Sorry.
That was doing, yeah. That
but
was,
this, but this is a separate thing.
That was, yeah. This is a separate thing.
Okay.
This was that one with the USA Network was an anti-bullying campaign with the Moth and with USA Network called Characters Unite. And I was working around with that. Talk about benefits. I got VIP passes to a Carly Rae Jepsen concert. So
what?
Call me maybe. So
I will call you maybe.
So that was ridiculous. But so George started this thing called the Unchained Tour. Got this old school bus, had a bunch of hippies paint it and retrofit it with couches and stuff inside. And I did three of those tours. And what they were based in the South, and we would do 10 shows in 10 days in 10 cities. And
wow.
It was a crazy schedule. And the bus only went maybe 50 miles an hour. So, like, we were purposely, it was a slow road through the South. Like, so we did a couple of them. There was one of them we did. It was stories, and we'd have a band with us. So there'd be, like, some music and some stories and music and some stories.
Right,
and
right.
Just, you know, really nice. And so the second one I did, we called it the Heart-Shaped Tour. It started in Savannah, went up through the western side of South Carolina, up through Tennessee, and then down through North Carolina, South Carolina. So it was like a heart-shaped path we took through the South. So that was, there was some musicians named Rachel Kate Gillen and Joel T. Hamilton, who goes by Mechanical River. They were the musicians that we had, and they were amazing.
Sure.
They're based in Charleston, South Carolina. We had the storytellers on that tour were Edgar Oliver, Dawn Frazier, myself, and Neil Gaiman.
What?
So Neil...
He was on tour with you. He was in the bus.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Fuck.
Writing. He was actually...
What?
What was he writing?
Sandman.
What? Oh my God. I kind of want to kill you so that I can eat your brain so I can absorb all of your essence and knowledge.
Yeah. So, I don't think that's actually how that works.
That's science.
But if you cook it,
that's
I'll
science.
Eat it too.
Fair enough. We'll share.
So, yeah. So it was Neil met us on the... We flew down to Savannah... and Neil was going to meet us at the first gig.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in Columbia at an art museum. We did a show in the round. So we were running late because the bus broke down. And
obviously.
We got there. We pulled up. Neil's hotel was, you know, down the street from the venue. He hopped in, and we had the rush. So it was just like, hey, how you doing, Peter, Neil? And then that was it. And then, like, we get there, had to change, eat real fast, figure out the tech. So, like, I'm looking. Nobody told us it was going to be in the round. So I came back in. I was like, hey, you know, I was like, hey, Neil, it's in the round, just so you know. He's like, all right, no problem. And then, so, like, that's how we met. It was like, let's get together. Let's do a show.
Right. Get the job done. There was no need for the small talk yet.
So. Yeah. And so the experience as a whole doing that tour is amazing because over the course of 10 days, the rest of the world disappears and you're just doing
yeah,
this.
Yeah, because like, you're working. You're busy.
Yeah, you're doing the show. Then you're going and crashing at somebody's house.
Right.
And then you're getting in the bus. And then every time you pull to a truck stop, there's just like people, children run by. And like, it's crazy. It's a big, crazy painted bus and there's chandeliers in it and stuff. And like, it's so crazy. And like,
this bus needs a chandelier.
Yeah. And there's like chalkboard things where kids come in and draw pictures. And like, it's pretty amazing. So like, you know, you're doing this thing. So like, you know, the first night we did the show was great. Neil's a nice guy, you know, and everybody did a good job. Mm-hmm. But then the second show was in a smaller venue, and it was another good show. And you know, as by the time the third night came, oh, this is the second day, we pull into the parking lot of the venue in the afternoon, and it's when was it? It was September 2012, and it was you know, it was sunny, it was beautiful, and like, I hear Neo just go, oh, look at this, and turn around, and he's holding in his hands a dead butterfly. And he's like, isn't it beautiful? And I just looked at him, and I was like, the fucking gaming. Like, that's of course, like, that was my first, like, of course he's holding a beautiful dead butterfly, all dressed in black, and his hair's a mess. Like, of course. And like then I was like, all right, this guy.
Right, this fucking guy.
Yeah, that was so, it became that. Then it was like, you know, that's what it was. And then like after the second show, he came up to me. He was like, you know, Peter, I'm thinking of because I, on those tours, I try to tell a different story every night.
Mm-hmm.
And he had, I think, he had one or two stories that he had prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I wanna prepare a new story. You know, can you help me with it?
Oh.
And I was like, sure, man, no problem. You know, and then, so like, he would tell it. And then I, you know, I gave him some notes. And then like, he went and did the thing. And it was good. You know, it was fine. But we started to get, you know, like his, there was, you know, 40% of the people there heard Neil Gaiman was coming to a small town in
right.
South Carolina. So, like, you would get, no offense and to anybody, but it was like the Hot Topic kids all came to the shows.
Right.
So, you could definitely tell, like, where, you know, his fans were.
Yeah.
And, like, they would, I mean,
the goth and the emo kids and the comic book nerds.
They
yeah.
would go crazy yeah. for him. And, like, because the thing about him is, like, he, for a lot of these kids, in the middle of nowhere, he was the only person that would have a voice that would speak to them.
Yeah.
He was the one.
Yeah.
He was, and then he gave them the right to speak. So, like, this man is and was and does represent, you know, an escape to a life that they want to live, you know, and I respect that totally.
Yeah.
And he would be, you know, he'd sign autographs and he was gracious to everybody.
Oh.
And he was really.
Wait, so he's a nice guy too?
He's super nice.
Oh, fuck him.
Yeah, he's.
He can't be that brilliant and that nice. That can't be. That's too perfect.
He's super sweet. So, like, you know, we had a good, like, during the week, we got to talk about all kinds of stuff. And it was what it was. We're just talking about regular, just life. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It wasn't about, I wasn't trying to pitch him anything.
Yeah.
He wasn't trying to impress me. We were just like, how'd you sleep last night? You know what I mean? We talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
How was your meal? And then, so as the week went on, there was one night we were staying in this little house that was up on top of a mountain and there were a bunch of switchbacks. So we had a van trailing us with a trailer in the back with all the gear. And so when we got up there, we couldn't turn around. So we had to unhitch the trailer, move it, turn the van around, and rehitch the trailer. So we had to unhitch the trailer by hand.
Right.
So Neil is picking this thing up and or trying to help. And, like, it came down on his foot, and it ripped his boot. And he had these fancy boots that, like, somebody gave him for his wedding.
Oh,
Amanda.
Fuck.
So then we went to some Western store and bought him a pair of, like, cowboy boots.
Oh.
So, I mean, it was like, but he was not setting himself apart. He was on the bus. He was just doing the thing. And that was how I would introduce him.
Mm-hmm.
I would intro him in the show, be like, you know, our next storyteller, you know who he is already. But let me tell you, he's just a dude. Like, don't sit there and take pictures with your cell phone. If you want a picture of him, Google him. Someone with a better camera will have taken a better picture of him. Just listen to his story. And like, in the end, what did I say? I said he's just a guy that wrote a book about some sand. Just relax.
Fantastic.
And but that what it did is like that set the stage. Yes. Of like it was just like okay. So his stories that he told, there was one about how he got Cabell, his dog that actually just passed away not that long ago, and how he got that dog. He told that story, and that story kind of also paralleled when he met Amanda.
Right.
He told this beautiful story. It was like his origin story about the first time he said fuck. And he was a little kid. Nice. And it made him realize the power of words. It's like how much he got in trouble. It started with the line of like, you know, I don't have an origin story. Because, you know, comic book stuff, you know. And then he talked about saying the word fuck, discovering how much trouble he got into, and then realizing the power of words. And that's how he became a writer.
Right.
And like, it was this cathartic, beautiful, amazing thing. And so, yeah, and there was one other story. I can't place it right now. But so we had this moment in probably the ninth show, the eighth or ninth show. It was in Charleston at the music hall. And there was, you know, like 1,000 people there. And I didn't realize this. He comes up to me. I introduce him. And he comes up to me and he gives me a hug. And he goes, I made it to friend. And I was like, what? And then after the show, we talked about it. And what he said was the first couple days, I would introduce him as, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Neil Gaiman. And then the next couple days, I was, please welcome my new friend, Neil Gaiman. And then, like, that night, I said, please welcome my friend, Neil Gaiman. And, like, he was so touched by that, that, like, he hugged me on stage, and it was just like, I made it the friend. And, like, it was this amazing, it was just amazing. And then at the end of the tour, my wife flew down. And after the very last show, it was just all this hustle bustle, man.
Yeah.
There was about a half an hour after the show where we were sitting in the green room. And man, by green room, I mean it was this room upstairs that was under construction. And we had like some plywood on some sawhorses. And like, I bought everybody a bottle of whiskey, so we all had whiskey. And it was me, my wife Sarah, Neil, and Edgar Oliver. Mm-hmm. There were just the four of us. And for about a half an hour, nobody bothered us. Mm-hmm. And we just talked about anything but what we were doing in the last 10 days. And it was one of the most beautiful conversations I've ever had. And so, like, I mean, since then, when Neil has stuff going on, you know, he'll call me up. Like, he did his Ocean at the End of the Lane book release at BAM.
Yeah.
And he asked me to open for him.
Oh, wow.
So, like, that was a lot of fun. And, like, the random people that knew me in the audience were, like, texting me, like, what are you doing on stage? Like, what, you know? And I told that...
What are you doing up there, Guerra?
And I told that story of, essentially what I just told you. I just told the story of how I met Neil.
Yeah.
And, you know, the butterfly, and then I made it the friend and all that.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And it was really nice. And I got to meet, you know, I got to meet his wife, and the two of them are very much in love, and... So, like, every once in a while, when he's in town, he'll give me tickets to whatever show he's doing.
Wow.
And he's always been, he was real, it was, man, he almost did the last BTK show. he had to be in San Francisco, and it was like a secret thing that I didn't tell anybody. And it almost happened. That would have been,
Well, that obviously means BTK needs to have a reunion show and bring Neil Gaiman.
I will learn how to play the accordion.
We already have an accordion.
Ah, damn it!
Manifest it. But like in the end, man, he is just a really sweet guy. He told me to next time that we're together. That, like, you know, it's always at some event or after a show when we run into each other. Mm-hmm. That, like, you know, if I'm having a conversation with somebody, he's like, okay, Peter, here's what we're going to do. I'll come up to you and I'll start talking to you. And then you say, just say, fuck off, Gaiman. And then I'll walk away all sheepish and it'll impress whoever you're talking to. he's got a great sense of humor. He's a really nice guy. And I was, and like, what it came down to on that experience, being able to, like, meet him and be with him and all that. Like, it was just seeing how he knows that he's Neil Gaiman in boldface,
right,
capital letters. He knows right. that.
Yeah, of course.
He knows what that means to people, and he respects that. Like, he respects what his work has meant for people.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And he appreciates it and respects it. So when his fans are there, he'll give them all the time he can give. You know, there's a lot of times where people want too much from
sure,
him.
Sure, obviously.
But you know, he's a genuinely sweet guy who believes in creating things.
See, I don't think I could have done that. If I had to introduce Neil Gaiman, I would be fanboying so hard that I would embarrass myself.
Yeah.
I would be like a little puppy who just shits himself because he's so excited.
Well, I think I understand. You know, and I've had moments with him since then.
Yeah.
Like that. Where just like someone's like, oh, but like, I can't believe, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't believe it. But in that context, there was no time.
Right. I guess it was the perfect way to do it because you were there to do a job and you need to get the job first and foremost.
The job was number one.
Right. Yeah.
And that was particularly, like I said, the first night where it was just, he just jumped in the car like, hey, how you doing? And then we did the show.
Right.
You know, and that, like, there was no time to do that. So because of that, we got to know each other as Peter and Neil instead of Peter and Neil Gaiman. Like, we got to, you know, and it got to be, or honestly, Peter Aguero and Neil Gaiman.
Yes.
But like, we just got to know each other as, we got to know each other as just two dudes.
That was
a great experience.
I think that's a good way to sort of wind down.
Cool.
Yeah. I know you got some shows coming up, so why don't you tell people where they can find you in February and forward.
Definitely, in February, come to the Bell House in Brooklyn on the first Monday of the month.
You gotta look at your handy dandy pocket computer.
Yeah, in February, on the 3rd of February, which is the regular first Monday of the month, we're doing a Moth Shop showcase of the best stories in the past 6 months of the Moth Shop community program.
Wonderful.
That's going to be at Housing Works. I'm hosting that show.
Oh, okay,
great.
On the 4th of February, I'm hosting the slam at the Bell House.
What's the theme on that one?
I'm not sure. Okay. Probably something about poop.
Well, I have just the story for that one.
On the 11th of February, I'm doing a show with Johnny Pork Pie at the Crane Theater and Iris Explosion about deconstructing burlesque.
Okay.
That sounds fascinating. And on the 15th of February, you can see me hosting Honey Badger Burlesque in
That's a show I've heard once or twice.
Yep. That's my show.
What?
Yeah. Don't worry, internets. I'm going to plug it again at the end of the show.
So is that it?
There's more stuff. I'm going to be, I got this weird gig in Las Vegas, but I'm not allowed to talk about it yet.
All right.
Okay. But there's other stuff.
Awesome.
But, I mean, I'm going to have a website soon. By the end of February, I'm going to have my website.
I'm actually shocked that you don't have one already.
Yeah, me too.
To be honest.
I'm an analog man in a digital world.
Yeah,
it's about time. I met with a web designer yesterday, and by the end of February, it'll be done.
Awesome.
PeterAguero.com eventually.
Look for it, internets.
Yeah.
Well, Peter, thank you so much for coming out.
Oh yeah, guys.
Thank you for making the trek out to Astoria.
Yeah.
To the Chaos House.
We plied you with coffee and lasagna.
Which I made.
It's good job, Chuck.
Thank you. For 2014, I'm gonna cook more. Apparently.
There you go.
It's not a resolution. It's just something that keeps fucking happening.
Thank you, Peter Aguero. Thank you, Lugo.
Thank you, Stunning.
And once again, we want to thank Peter Aguero for being our guest this month.
I love him so much.
I've known Peter, I guess, going on 4 years now, four or 5 years now, and I've learned so much from him, I'm very, very lucky that I get to count him as a friend and have him be so inspiring to me.
Yeah,
basically.
That's true.
But yeah, let's get out of here. Let's wrap this up. What are you doing, Chuck Stunning, where people can come see you do stuff?
Well, let me grab my planner that is pages because I don't use my phone to plan things.
Right, because you're a Luddite.
Only when it comes to planning my life, because if it's physically written, I'll remember it.
Fair enough. What do you got going on?
I actually only have Honey Badger Burlesque.
Oh.
It's every third Saturday of the month at Rapture Lounge in Astoria.
Wonderful.
We have one coming up this Saturday, but this will be out till after that happens.
Do you know what the theme of it is for February?
For February, it is Honey Badger's Geek Out, and it's Sherry Cola's birthday show.
Oh.
So we're gonna celebrate the birth of my co-producer by bringing her all of her nerdy favorite burlesquers.
Oh, I like
that. It's gonna be really fun.
Yay!
It's gonna be really great. And then also, just go to www.afterbirthmonkey.com. You'll learn all the things that we're doing. Buy our album.
Buy the album.
Buy my album.
The album is so good.
Afterbirth Monkey. Man dies defecating. A drinking game.
I actually really like your album a lot.
Wait, I do remember something.
Oh.
On the 30th of January.
Yeah.
This will be out before that.
Yeah.
Afterbirth Monkey is doing a 45-minute set at Rapture Lounge.
Oh, hey!
Yay, I remembered something!
Yeah, you did!
It wasn't written down.
I'm only doing one schedule. I mean, I'm sure my calendar will fill up, but I'm only doing one schedule thing in February, and that's on February 8th, I'm going to be in D.C. with a show.
Ooh.
I don't know what show that is, but it's going to...
Vague it up a little there, Lugo.
Yeah, there's going to be a show in D.C. I haven't decided if it's going to be like a burlesque show or a all magic show or a combination of the two. I don't know yet. I haven't decided yet.
Well, if it's a burlesque show.
You heard it here first, Internet. I'm begging for work.
We shall see. Ooh. We shall see. But that's it. That's pretty much it.
Or if you need music.
But this week, because Schaefer's not here, and I feel like when the Schaefer's away, the Nelson will play, and because Schaefer hates contests,
we have
a listener contest! All right, ladies and gentlemen of the internet,
boys and girls,
ladies and gentlemen, all, ladies, and lady gentlemen,
all 11 of you,
I have in my hand right now a BTK band CD. This was before they started doing all of their crazy, crazy shows, and so this is like the proto version of the BTK band. I also have in my hand an Afterbirth Monkey CD.
Man,
so I have two CDs for winning. All you have to do is write an email to epicpodcast@gmail.com, and I want you to finish this Mad Libs sentence.
Pete and Neil go to blank. And they saw blank.
That's right. One more time. The sentence you need to fill in is...
Pete and Neil go to blank, and they saw blank.
Go ahead and email your answers to epicpodcast@gmail.com. Also, feel free to write us love mail, hate mail, send us links to porn, whatever you want.
Possible...
Possible
gigs. I don't know.
Possible gigs? Yeah, you can hire us.
Yeah, hire us through that.
Hire us to do things.
Why not? I like money.
Chuck, I want to say this has been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, Luca, I love
being
your
on
podcast.
A podcast. Yeah. Thank you so much for filling in.
To be honest,
in.
I have a confession to make about this contest.
What's that?
I really hope C. Muldrew wins.
I think maybe C. Muldrew can't win because she always wins. And it may seem like we're...
favoritism.
Yeah.
Well, I hope she wins anyway.
C. Muldrew wins in our hearts.
Find me on Facebook. Let's be like internet buddies.
Wow.
Charles Stunning, find it.
Wow.
I want to be your friend.
And with the ringing of the bell, that has been, ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Epic Podcast, episode 17. I have been your host, Nelson Lugo.
And I have been your other host, not Schaefer the Dark Lord, Charles Stunning.
Be safe, internet.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Epic Podcast. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend, rating and reviewing us on iTunes, shopping at nerdyshow.com/store, or directly donating to the network. Any sized contribution gets you exclusive Nerdy Show audio and images and lets you participate in our monthly support drives. Just go to nerdyshow.com/support to chip in. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more episodes of the Epic Podcast, as well as other fine programs, community forums, videos, articles, and more, head over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via the iTunes Store. And for the latest news, follow us on all your favorite social networks. We're glad to be your home for authentic nerdy entertainment.
Hey guys, good morning.
Good morning.
This lasagna is really good.
Yay!
I like it a lot.
That might be the first lasagna I've ever made.
Really?
Yeah. It is.
Very tasty. I think you'd remember if it were your first.
It's very, very tasty.
It is my first.
Okay.
I like to qualify my whole life by going, kind of, might be, maybe. Never commit to anything. Yes.
May I make a small suggestion?
Yes.
A little more cheese.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's wonderful.
Did you use all the cheese?
I used all the mozzarella.
Yeah, but other than that, the sauce is really tasty.
Money for cheese is hard. Can't afford fucking cheese. It's a
money
luxury.
Money for cheese. That's the name of my autobiography.
Money for cheese,
the Nelson Lugo story.
She will hate so much because it'll be like, it's going to attract mice.
It's going to, oh yeah.